This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome back to The Morning Run. I'm Roshan Kanasin with Kusi Chuang and Noel Lim in the studio this morning. In about 15 minutes, we'll be taking a look at global markets. But right now, we're taking a look at the political happenings in Malaysia with Jahaba Sadiq, editor of The Malaysian Insight. And Malaysian lives have changed dramatically since the movement control order came into place on March 18th. We're currently about to enter the fourth phase of the MCO with a tentative exit on May 12th. Since then, the economy has come to an almost grinding halt, with most forced to stay at home unless they work in essential services, and questions are being raised about if and when there will be an end to the MCO, especially since there have been no signposts from the government on what to expect and the benchmarks that they are at, and the benchmarks are in this regard. So for more on this and the politics around it, we speak to Jahaba Sadiq, editor of The Malaysian Insight. Jahaba, thank you for speaking to us this morning. Now, this is phase four of the MCO, which started on March 18th, and Malaysia is in a lockdown, but yet politics seems to be continuing behind the scenes. Now, what do you think of Tan Sri Muhyiddin Yassin's appointments, both at the GLCs, GLICs, and even the special envoys?
Well, I think it's only to be expected. He has to appoint all his supporters to positions that are paid by the public purse just to keep his support, really. There's no other choice. You need qualified people at the top of these GLCs or agencies, not for any reason, but to provide leadership. But if you have to keep on putting all your elected MPs who don't have any position in government per se, then it's just a means of paying them off for their support.
How in control is Muhyiddin over Perikatan Nasional leaders?
Well, how do I say this? I don't think he has any control whatsoever. He's at their mercy. He's an inconvenience they put up with just to take power midway into this in the last government's tenure, really, if you think about it. The fact that the children of the top UMNO leader can go around with impunity meeting ministers says a lot about what kind of power and hold that Tan Sri Muhyiddin Yassin have over the rest of his colleagues in Perikatan Nasional. I think he has very little power at this point in time. And the fact that there's so many boo-boos by some of the ministers tell you that everybody's just in it for their own selves.
After the MCO, do you expect that might be an internal coup or internal power struggle within that coalition?
Well, it's a matter of convenience, this government at this point in time. If there's any kind of coup, they would eventually have to go back to parliament to confirm their power grab, so to speak. So I think at this point in time, if you look at things, there won't be any changes. Maybe before budget in October, we might see some changes. Don't expect any changes in the current parliament sitting on May 18, because it's just one day. So it'll take some time to play out. I think it depends on two things at this point in time. Tan Sri Muhyiddin Yassin's health. He looks a bit stressed. As you know, he survived cancer. So he needs to see whether he's up to the game. And the other thing is also internally within Bersatu, whether they want to still go with him at this point in time, they are, or, back to Dr. Mahathir eventually.
Jahaba, given the fact that Parliament hasn't really set in session yet, and Muhyiddin Yassin is still very much a first-time Prime Minister, how strongly do you gauge his position in power within the Perikatan Nasional? And I think a bit further out, do you think he's a Prime Minister for the long term, or do you think he's more transient in nature for something else to happen?
I think, to answer your last question, he is more transient than anything else. Now, I don't see him being there longer. I think he'd probably be the shortest-serving Prime Minister for many reasons, and politically it's because his party holds the fewer seats than UMNO. And I would like to think that UMNO is not the one that's controlling most of the strings right now, so to speak, because they are in key ministries. Ismail Sabri is the one making a lot of daily press conferences, not the Prime Minister, whom I presume is busy working as much as his ministers are. But what really the point is that you go into a coalition like this, it's been what, nearly 2 months now, with not much to show, except hanging on to the coattails of the health DG, who's doing a perfectly good job. But that's all you can do, right? Just restrict people from moving out, put the soldiers and policemen to make sure this happens, and while trying to figure out a plan economically and politically for the country.
So, Jabba, what you just said in terms of UMNO being the real puppet master behind the scenes, what does that mean for the country over the long term? And I think more immediate concern, what does that spell for the various graft and corruption cases that are still being tried in the courts of Malaysia?
Okay, well, two things. I think we're back to the days before May 9th, 2018. Where you know UMNO and its associates rule with a bit of impunity and a lot of detachment from real people on the streets. So that's one. They just move on in their own orbit and you know just get the key positions and make money and that's about it really. But I think really for all the court cases and all that will still go on for a while for the simple reason. Rather not go on for a while. It's been sort of postponed right now. I think it will go on, and you know you can't say anything about the judiciary really because they've been pretty much independent. But I think eventually people and politicians like Dato Sri Najib Razak, Ahmad Zahid Hamidi, and all want vindication in courts that they've been cleared rather than having the cases dropped against them.
Well, you know, I just want to also step away from Perikatan for a while. What is your assessment of the state of Pakatan Harapan? And do we know for sure who is leading that opposition pack now?
Well, okay, so I think Pakatan Harapan is still in shock as to what happened 2 months ago. And they're still trying to recover from that. And also to see the kind of feedback about their less than two-year rule, from a lot of people. They thought they were making a lot of progress. But not enough by any measure from whether it's civil society or people at large, whether in urban areas or in rural areas. So I think it's a good time for them to take stock of what has happened and then move on from that. I mean, it hasn't been a bad government, so to speak, but they came in at a time when there's a lot of stuff to clean up. That's a four-letter word I wanted to use, but I can't use. So they clean up a lot of things, and it took time against their own projection. So, they've had an uneven performance at that point in time. As to who the opposition leader is, I think it's very clear that it is Anwar Ibrahim. And I think come May 18th, when we go to Parliament, Anwar Ibrahim will be at that spot, you know, still waiting to cross over to be Prime Minister.
Now, Jabba, in your opinion piece a few days ago, you questioned why there was no clear exit plan for the MCO while the economic repercussions are already being felt. Do we know why there is no definitive roadmap here or even a gradual removal of restrictions like we've seen in other countries like New Zealand or Germany?
I think, to be clear, there is some kind of things they are planning right now. They're writing up their own roadmap, looking at what's going around the world. That much is clear from all the meetings they have put on Instagram or Twitter. But I just think that at this point in time, they don't have an idea of what's going on and what should be done because they're not meeting or engaging with enough people from industry, be it SMEs, the MNCs and all that, on what they should do in terms of like safe distancing or social distancing or the kind of procedures we need to go through. I mean, if you look at other countries around the world, New Zealand, I just read on Guardian, Wales itself has got a plan. Most countries, Italy has a plan, France has a plan, and, you know, they are worse hit than us. Spain has a plan. In our case, I think we just have a group of people who have no experience, one, in private sector, have no experience in working out things with the civil service, who also are pretty much detached from real life. So you just have a bunch of guys just holding on to the health director general to keep people at home while they figure out exactly what they want from Malaysia. I mean, Malaysia is a country where 7 out of 10 people work in SMEs. But SME support is almost nothing, right, if you think about it. And if you impose on the SMEs to have cleaning three times a day and all other kinds of procedures, they're going to say, I'd rather shut down for a while because I can't afford it. Most businesses in Malaysia, I think at this point in time, as we can see, even media, even us, can't last more than 1 month without any kind of cash flow.
And Jabba, just speaking on the coordination front, do you have any sense of whether there is a coordination between the different ministries or what is happening behind the scenes in government? I think you've pointed out that not enough private sector communication, but what about in the government itself between ministries?
Okay, so I think within ministries, there's not much coordination because they're all competing amongst each other to come out as the better minister, as the sharper minister, as the smarter minister. So everyone is trying to take each other's roles in coming up with a plan. So, and you know, I mean, the reality is before March 1st or before the Chariton move, they were all enemies, right? I mean, PAS and UMNO might have been friends, but they weren't talking to the guys from Bersatu or that rump from PKR. So now they're in government together, deputies from different parties, and ministers from different parties, they're trying to work together. But, you know, 3 months ago, they were at each other's throats. So I think it'll take some time to build up the team. The only reason when they set up this government was because it was a time of crisis and they didn't want Anwar Ibrahim to be prime minister. I mean, if that's the only reason you have to set up a government, then, you know, it's probably the worst reason. Because if you probably are no better than Anwar Ibrahim if he was in power anyway. And we'll never know because Anwar Ibrahim is not in power, but we have these chaps who are in power from former governments, the last two governments, and they still can't seem to be doing their job.
All right, Jabba, thank you so much for your time this morning. That was Jabba Sadiq, editor of the Malaysian Insight. And so quite an insightful conversation there, Jabba, giving us his insights from what he is observing. And so what are your takeaways from that?
Well, for me, I think it's the exit plan, right? So he's right. Wales, I think Scotland as well, has come up with some exit plans. Even the US, right? 1 million cases, but, you know, they're talking about reopening the economy and we seem a bit more cautious. But I'd like to see, I think, maybe lockdowns in red zones, but green zones, more opening public spaces with the social distancing and all that. Maybe the elderly will be required to stay at home, but kids can go out to play and maybe schools will be reopened.
Noelle's got a plan already. She's got it all set up. The 10-point Noelle
yes,
exit strategy.
I think I should just email this to Muhyiddin.
You should totally email that over to the government. But right now, we're going into a few messages. And when we come back, we'll be getting analysis from Peter Barrison, Chief Global Investment Strategist at BCA Research, about global asset allocation. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.